Okay, I'm going to pick up actually from page 27, about halfway down. The part I'm skipping, actually Greg recommended that I skip this part, is the part in which Solomon meets three other captives at Williams's slave pen. The three others are actually somebody named Williams, Ray, and Randall. And Randall is a child, actually. He spends most of his time crying about missing his mom. I remained in Williams's slave pen about 2 weeks. The night previous to my departure, a woman was brought in, weeping bitterly and leading by the hand a little child. They were Randall's mother and half-sister. On meeting them, he was overjoyed, clinging to her dress, kissing the child, and exhibiting every demonstration of delight. The mother also clasped him in her arms, embraced him tenderly and gazed at him fondly through her tears, calling him by many an endearing name. So yay, a happy reunion, sort of, even though they're still, captured as slaves. Emily, the child, was 7 or 8 years old, of light complexion, and with a face of admirable beauty. Her hair fell in curls around her neck, while the style and richness of her dress and the neatness of her whole appearance indicated she had been brought up in the midst of wealth. Pretty unusual. Keep reading. She was a sweet child indeed. The woman also was arrayed in silk, with rings upon her fingers and golden ornaments suspended from her ears. Her air and manners, the correctness and propriety of her language, all showed evidently that she had sometimes stood above the common level of a slave. So the appearance of this woman, Eliza, indicates that she is not normally a slave, that she has lived above that social status. And we're going to hear her story shortly, actually. She seemed to be amazed at finding herself in such a place as that. It was plainly a sudden and unexpected turn of fortune that had brought her there. Filling the air with her complainings, she was hustled with the children and myself into the cell. Language can convey but an inadequate impression of the lamentations to which she gave incessant utterance. So I'm going to skip down to the bottom of this page because the rest of that paragraph is all about Eliza weeping and moaning about their current state. And she, even after the kids go to sleep, she talks to them, you know, apologizing, telling them they have a horrible fate, she feels awful, etc., etc. It goes on and on. I mean, if you just imagine the worst possible feelings and expressing those, that's what's happening. Okay, bottom of page 28. Her name was Eliza, and this was the story of her life as she afterwards related it. So now we're going to get Eliza's story. This is not happening right now. This is what Solomon is reporting to us about Eliza. She was the slave of Elisha Berry, a rich man living in the neighborhood of Washington. She was born, I think she said, on his plantation. Years before, he had fallen into dissipated habits and quarreled with his wife. In fact, soon after the birth of Randall, they separated. Leaving his wife and daughter in the house they had always occupied, he erected a new one nearby on the estate. Into this house he brought Eliza, and on the condition of her living with him, she and her children were to be emancipated. Okay, this is pretty remarkable. This woman, Eliza, lived on the plantation of Elisha Berry. Elisha Berry didn't get along with his wife. He built a second home, and he moved Eliza and her family into that home. And he said that if they lived there, then they would be freed. She resided with him there 9 years, with servants to attend upon her, and provided with every comfort and luxury of life. So she went from being a slave on a plantation to being like a master almost. I mean, she was the lady of the house. Emily was his child. Finally, her young mistress, who had always remained with her mother at the homestead, married Mr. Jacob Brooks. So Emily's the son of the white guy and of Eliza, and his daughter married a guy named Mr. Jacob Brooks. At length, for some cause, as I gathered from her relation, beyond Barry's control, a division of his property was made. She and her children fell to the share of Mr. Brooks. So when they divided up the Elisha Berry's property, when he was this old man, he wasn't dead yet, but when they divided up his property, that included Eliza and her family. They were considered property, and they were given to the daughter's new husband, Mr. Brooks. During the 9 years she had lived with Barry, in consequence of the position she was compelled to occupy, she and Emily had become the object of Mrs. Barry and her daughter's hatred and dislike. This is key, ladies. This is very common, that the slave women are particularly hated by the white master's family, especially the women in the family. That's a huge thing when Greg is asking you to talk about the treatment of slaves. This is a common theme you're going to see over and over. The master's wife and daughters hating the black female slaves. Barry himself, she represented as a man of a naturally kind heart, who always promised her that she should have her freedom, and who she had no doubt would grant it to her if it were only in his power. So she trusted Mr. Barry. She said that, you know, the old guy, that he was actually going to give her his freedom. As soon as they thus came into the possession and control of the daughter, it became very manifest they would not live long together. The sight of Eliza seemed to be odious to Mrs. Brooks. Neither could she bear to look upon the child, half-sister and beautiful as she was. Again, there it is, white master's family, hating the black female slaves. The day she was led into the pen, Brooks had brought her from the estate into the city, under pretense that the time had come with when her free papers were to be executed in fulfillment of her master's promise. Elated at the prospect of immediate liberty, she decked herself and little Emmy in their best apparel and accompanied him with a joyful heart. On their arrival in the city, instead of being baptized into the family of free men, she was delivered to the traitor Birch. So Mr. Brooks, who owned them, that's the master's daughter's husband, said, "Oh, come on, it's time for you to get your free papers. Come with me to the city." But that's not what he did. He handed them over to Birch. The paper that was executed was a bill of sale. So the papers they got, it wasn't papers of freedom. It was like a receipt. Basically. The hope of years was blasted in a moment, from the height of most exulting happiness to the utmost depths of wretchedness she had that day descended. No wonder that she wept and filled the pen with wailings and expressions of heart-rending woe. So her sadness is even greater because she thought she was going to get her freedom, which brought her mood so high up, and then, crashed all the way down as she was sold as a slave. Eliza is now dead. Now remember, Solomon Northup wrote this after his freedom. So Eliza is now dead, far up the Red River where it pours its waters sluggishly through the unhealthy lowlands of Louisiana. She rests in the grave at last, the only resting place of the poor slave. How all her fears were realized, how she mourned day and night and never would be comforted, how, as she predicted, her heart did indeed break with the burden of maternal sorrow, will be seen as the narrative proceeds. So he said, we're going to see the story of Eliza and you'll understand why her heart broke and why she died a heartbroken woman. That's the end of chapter 3.